Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to talk about how meditation might be a secret to bulletproof immunity. Who says? Scientists from both Carnegie Mellon University and UCLA published in the peer-reviewed journal Brain Behavior and Immunity. So all that we just did, hours a day for 2 weeks at the anti-aging clinical study, but using meditation, Tai Chi, Qigong, energy transfer, there's science behind all of it, and it's coming out. And this shows it helps your immunity. That's just one of many studies we're going to be doing today, but also University of Texas, UTA's microbiologists studied the impact of fermented soy products and digestive health and said, yeah, that's a ticket. Well, anyone who's had the infections we'll appreciate what this means. We'll deal with that. Also, how probiotics can prevent cancer. Yeah, they have very strong anti-cancer effects. Cleveland Clinic's Genomic Medicine Institute. And how natural light can be a key to improving mood and reducing insomnia. Monash University in Australia. And warning signs of dementia found in your blood. University Medical Center of Gothenburg in Germany. And also how some people are just ridiculously healthy at an older age, and yet they had the same gut microbiome as healthy 30-year-olds. Western Ontario University and Tianyi Health Sciences Institute in China. So we have a lot to share. Plus, what is it that we don't look at when it comes to getting a tattoo? All right, the hidden dangers that are then residing in your blood and organs from that tattoo. There's a lot of them. So I'll share that with you as well. And then I mentioned something about 3 months ago. A part of the anti-aging work I've done is in called autophagy, A-U-T-O-P-H-A-G-Y. And it keeps your cells working smoothly. It's the reason why you maintain your equipment, your car. Well, the same applies for your health. You have to maintain it or you lose it. So ways to stimulate autophagy. We have a lot to share today, but there's more. We're also going today to take a look at the moral roots of liberals and conservatives by Professor Jonathan Haidt. And a Dr. Dathans, he is a regular, non-controversial, mainstream medical doctor who made the mistake of pointing out some of the discrepancies between the official truths on let's say, Fauci truths, CDC truths on COVID, and what the actual scientific literature shows. So they went after him. He talks about being deplatformed after a long distinguished career as just a mainstream physician and scientist. Also, we're going to hear from one of the top epidemiologists, medical doctors, Dr. J. Bhattacharjee, where he's being asked to challenge some of the false facts around COVID hospitalizations. And he does so. I'm not pleased with the person he's interviewing, but, you know, it's who is saying it, and he's honest in his answers. Also from Bill Maher, new rule, don't segregate the anthem. So you see, we have a lot. But I'd like you to think on something before we begin. For those of us who are pro-vaccine, but want an honest narrative, if you're saying something is 95% effective, prove it. You didn't prove it. You lied. It was only 1% effective. And you'll hear that said today by different people. Also, there's a new drug out. And the new drug just happens to do, well, a lot of the stuff that ivermectin does. Oh, and it was also manufactured by the same manufacturer as ivermectin. But ivermectin, you can get a full treatment for pennies. The new drug is $70, yet it supposedly does the same thing. Not quite. The new drug also has a lot of side effects. Ivermectin doesn't. Ivermectin's been used over 4 billion times. The medicine, not the vet medicine, So they played a game of trying to say, oh, Joe Rogan used a horse, you know, horse medicine. No, he did not. And thank goodness that he called out Dr. Gupta on his program last week and really read him the Riot Act about what's wrong with your network lies. Of course CNN lies. They're just pathologically lying about everything. I don't know why anyone would ever turn on CNN. And by the way, very few people do. And because they lie about everything. They're purely political. Same with the New York Times and all these other publications and outlets. But good for Joe Rogan for showing the prescription, showing the bottle in its human ivermectin, not veterinary ivermectin. And then they lied about the poisons. So there was a doctor who looked up all the poison control center data, and gee whiz, nobody died from ivermectin. Oh, but they did die from other things, including, you know, the sterilizing hand sanitizers I tell you not to use. Yeah, people died from that. So we've been lied to about everything all the time, so people are confused. But if you're making public policy and mandating public policy, including what you're not constitutionally allowed to do, and putting people in jail, or confining them to home, or preventing them from working, or flying, or traveling, then it's no longer a little deal. It's a big deal. So here's the question I'm going to raise, and I'd like you to call in throughout the show, not at the end, just throughout, and I'll be happy to take your calls. And our talkback number is 888-874-4888. So here are some facts. These are the government's own statistics, not mine. No opinion associated. I'm only taking not even the United States deaths and injuries, which are far higher than Europe's, even though they've had about the same amount of inoculations. But in Europe, the official records are 27,247 deaths as of Friday. However, how many people have been injured? Many seriously injured. Many will die from their injuries. Many will be handicapped for the rest of their life. And many will be in wheelchairs, have leg amputations, etc. 2,563,768 injuries. Let me repeat this. Write it down. This is just one statistic from one group of countries in the European Union, which represents 27 countries who are members. 2,563,768 injuries. And that is never discussed. And yet we're told it's safe and effective. We're condemned for not taking it if you have not taken it. Okay, so I put this in perspective. So here's what's important about this. And let's keep this in perspective now. So let's add up the government's official numbers of those wounded in wars. All of our wars. The Revolutionary War, 6,100 people. War of 1812, 4,500 people. The Mexican War, they didn't have figures. There was 1,730 death and died in battle. The Civil War, 475,000 wounded. The Spanish-American War, 1,700 wounded. World War I, 204,000 wounded. World War II, 671,000 wounded. The Korean War, 103,000 wounded. The Vietnam War, 303,000 wounded. Wow, that's a lot of wounded from all these wars. Now, we're talking about Vietnam, Korea, World War II, World War I, the Spanish-American Civil War, the Civil War, Mexican War, and War of 1812 and the Revolutionary War. We're talking about nine wars, major wars. At least seven of them were major wars. Okay, add all that up, and what does the amount come to? Well, I did the math, and here's the number. 1,768,300 injured in all of America's wars. Listen again, 1,768,300 in all of American wars injured. How many injured in just the last 6 months from the COVID vaccine in just one part of the world? Not the United States, not Great Britain, not Scotland, not Japan, not Thailand. No, not in India, not anywhere else, just one area. 2,563,768. That's a huge difference. So Just so it's in proper perspective, as of this second, I can say, using their own official statistics, that more people have been injured by the COVID vaccines than all of American wars, all of its injured, combined. And even more killed than four of the American wars, including Vietnam. And yet, it's safe and effective. Now, let's put this in a little different perspective. In 1976, with the advent of a completely fraudulent non-pandemic, the flu, the government vaccinated 40 million people. They acknowledged the error when it was exposed, and even 60 Minutes' Mike Wallace did a segment on it with Guillaume Briere, a woman paralyzed for life, and the government not willing to pay for any of this. And always the government denies all injuries and deaths as much as it can. Now, keep in mind that from then till now, more people have been injured with this current vaccine than all other vaccines in American history combined. More deaths, more injuries than all these people who died or were injured in wars than this vaccine. And yet we're supposed to believe that it's completely safe and effective. And yet they identify themselves. You cannot sue the manufacturer. You can't sue any government agent. You can't sue any government agency. So people are going to go broke, lose their life savings, because they had trust that something was safe and effective. Now, was the mainstream media, were the doctors and you see in the media always saying how safe and effective and get your vaccine or you're irresponsible, are they going to be responsible? No. Have they apologized? No. Has anyone in the media brought you these statistics? No. But at that time, with approximately 53 dying, all told, they banned it completely. They've actually banned other medications with as few as 20 dead in the whole country. 20 people dead, it's gone. It's out of there. Not even a black box. So here you can injure more people than all American wars combined and kill more than the Vietnam War, and they praise it. There's no condemnation. There's not even a discussion or an open debate. What does that tell you? I'm interested in your thoughts. 888-874-4888. Let me also mention that the majority of people coming here listen in the archives, excuse me, in the evening. Let me give you our archive number so you have it. The number is 631-359-9463. Again, 631-359-9463. But people travel. Sometimes they just want to tune on noon to 1, Monday through Friday, 7 to 8 on Tuesday, to listen to it live. And so if you want to listen live, the number is 717-734-6955. 717-734-6955. Oh, by the way, I want to thank all the people who showed up for the premiere of Last Call for Tomorrow, plus the discussions, answering questions, telling about the best place in America to live. It was a 7-hour webinar, one of the longest I've ever done. Longest was on surviving how to survive COVID. That was 8 hours. We are editing that, hopefully down by about an hour, taking out all the breaks and things that were not relevant. And I'll have that posted as soon as possible. So that's coming at you. Now we go back to where we began, looking at the latest on health and healing. And the first thing up is that in all the things you can do for your health, staying calm is one of the most important. Becoming aggravated, angry, rageful actually works against you, irrespective of the legitimacy of what you feel that you're, you know, angry about. And that causes cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, catecholamines, adrenaline, all to flush forth. Now, normally that's a fight or flight response, which lasts about 2 minutes. Just ask any athlete who's gotten really hyper going into a race, and you race out, and before you know it, you're exhausted. Your muscles begin to tighten, and whatever you gained in the first lap of a mile race or three mile, 4 mile, 5 mile race, you're going to lose because you're tightening up. Whereas if you go out calm and meditative, there's no rush, there's no elevation of blood sugar, you just keep a nice smooth pace and just bring it in. Well, that's just one example, but this works with you on all things. Stop and think. Remember your mother or grandmother told you, stop and count to 10 before you get angry? They were right. Researchers examined how meditation can create a positive mental state, which in turn helps boost immunity. The team discovered that when older adults participated in an 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction program, there was a significant decrease in the expression of pro-inflammatory genes, which resulted in a lower risk of death and injury from biochemical reactions. Remember, your brain, your emotions can literally kill you. So when we hear that people are, well, they had a good diet and they took their supplements and they ended up with a stroke, how were your emotions? How often did you get angry? How often did you get rageful? How often did you scream at someone? How long did you hold on to something negative? Because all you're doing then is you're just taking minutes of your life and cutting them off your lifespan. Remember, when you meditate, and there are 20 randomized controlled trials that establish this, the effect of mindfulness meditation has on your immune system, you reduce markers of inflammation, and high levels of which are often correlated with decreased immune functioning and disease. There's an increased number of CD4 cells, which are the immune system's helper cells that are involved in sending signals to other cells telling them to destroy infections. And there's increased telomerase activity, and telomerase helps promote the stability of chromosomes and prevent their degradation. And telomerase deterioration leads to cancer and premature aging and premature death. So just keep in mind that you think you got it all together, but if you don't have your emotions together, and if you walk around, especially as a lot of people do today, with self-righteous indignation about everything, I mean, some people just wake up in the morning looking for a reason to be angry. Okay, they're not going to be with us as long as everyone else who wakes up with a happy disposition and looking for a way to honor life that day. A microbiologist at the University of Texas at Arlington is studying how fermented soybean products, there's your misos, tempehs, impact the human digestive system. And what they have found is that these, like kimchi and other fermented foods from around the world, they really are good for your intestines. They're very, very powerful. So what happens is that they help your digestion also. A lot of people have poor digestion. So if you have poor digestion, then start having more fermented foods in your diet. Eat slower. Don't drink a lot of hot or cold items with your meals so you don't oversaturate your stomach with fluid and therefore slow down or eliminate digestion altogether, because your body, when it's over full, it will purge that food right in undigested, partially digested, into the intestine. And then you end up with malabsorption syndrome. Also, from Cleveland Clinic's Genomic Medical Institute, probiotics provide anti-cancer effects. Again, we're looking at one piece of the puzzle. And in my life, I have found, especially after I'd done over 147 experiments, some I didn't count because they weren't complete, but the ones that were complete, each one was a piece of a puzzle. And I would sit there and I had a gigantic chart on the wall. Any of you came up, remember that giant chart? And it looked like an organization chart. For example, I had one chart that said modified fasting increases lifespan by up to 21%. Then juicing increases lifespan. Eating the calories your body requires, but not excess calories, increases lifespan. So I had all these different pieces showing how you can increase the lifespan. And then you put them all together. But guess what is the number one thing that's going to increase your lifespan? The degree to which you can maintain purpose and happiness in life, those two. Those are the two legs you walk on in life. And you either walk fully and with ease, no matter what crisis you're prevailing in. But if you're not happy, in the end, you're not going to be healthy. And I was thinking about this yesterday. I was at the farmer's market early in the morning because I had to spend the whole day doing the webinar, the Zoom. And by the way, we're going to do the Zoom. I'm going to introduce my program tomorrow by Zoom, so it'll be video streamed so you can watch it. Just getting some equipment in to recalibrate it. In any case, a woman came over to me, and her and her husband, and she asked a question. She said, "My husband and I used to be in your running club way back in 1977. I thought, okay. She said there were probably 1,000, 1,500 people that were in the park. So, you know, you were up there talking, then you led people out and showed them how to do this. And we actually did a marathon together. And that was one of the highlights of our life. And we did a lot of fun things together. And we came to a couple of your lectures. And then we moved. And this is before the internet. And we just lost touch with you for like 30 years. And we divorced in the interim and went our own separate ways. And then I realized recently why it was so important that what it was missing in my life was what I was not willing to understand about what was happening in my husband's life. I was very selfish, she was saying. She was selfish about not being able to be in his shoes, since he was a very quiet person, didn't express himself a lot, but she never stopped. She said, I'm one of those people that gab nonstop. So I didn't stop to ask him, what was he thinking? What was he feeling? It was just, what am I feeling? What am I saying? And she said, then I just had this big loneliness. And instead of going out, because I'd gone out and dated, and the energy just wasn't the same. Then I realized, what did I do? And she said, I just thought you'd like to know. A friend of mine sent me a copy of a film you did a long time ago. It was called Starting Over. And I watched it and I realized I've got nothing to lose. And I called him and I said, I just want to apologize because I think the reason that marriage ended was because I didn't know what it was like to be you in your shoes. Could you tell me? And so they had conversations, they got together, they met, and after months of this, they rekindled their relationship. And now they were back together again. They were very happy because they established that you got to really be in the other person's shoes before you judge them. Try to understand what it is to be the other. And she said, just want to say thank you because that wouldn't have happened had I not watched that and realized that things can start over. And she said, could you address this? Because I had to rush. And I said, I've got to rush. I'm sorry. Can't talk at this moment. I've got a big webinar coming up. I got to get back. So here is to Paul and Louise. And here's to everyone else. In order for us to reclaim any legitimacy of the past, we have to understand what was actually occurring. Our memory is never accurate. It can always change. Good things become bad, bad things become good. We alter our perception based upon our current reality. So if our current reality is, well, you're a victim, then everything in your past is going to look like you were a victim. Therefore, as long as you feel a victim, that does not allow any energy to harmonize. You're only going to harmonize with other victims. But if you can understand what happened to cause you to break up with someone, at any time in life. Now, in many cases, there's just no opportunity to get back together, even to have a conversation. Maybe someone's moved on, you don't know where they're at, maybe they died. But it depends on how long it's been. But knowing what caused that can be extremely important in preventing it from happening again. Were you patient with the person? Did you understand what it was like to be them? Did you understand what it would be like for them to be them and dealing with you? Were you dominant? Were you submissive? Were you honest? Were you manipulative? All these things have to be taken into consideration, and you must be completely honest with yourself. No ego, no defense mechanism. Everybody wants to defend themselves about everything. Very few people are ever honest about anything. That's my experience. And it's because we don't want to be judged for being wrong, so we lie nonstop. We are a nation of pathological liars. institutions lie, government lies. Everything is a lie. It's so hard to find just honest people anymore. And generally, it's when you have nothing to lose, you're willing to be honest. It's like people on their deathbed saying, I wished I would have done it differently. Okay. But even then, they have to wait until they're a breath away from passing before they'll say that. What if you just were honest about your own deficiencies, your own dark side, your own limitations, your own impatience, your own judgmentalism? And what if you were able to say to each one of those, how did that impact my relationships? And at that moment, simply say, now I understand more completely, not totally, but more completely, why I was really not the right person for that other individual. They deserve better than me. Now, that's hard to say. But when you can get to that point where you can be honest about the times that you under-actualized your potential, under-shared your emotions, positive emotions, love and kindness and joy and creativity and spontaneity, where you kept yourself sequestered because of pain, some psychological pain, some emotional pain, and you didn't want to be hurt again, so you weren't going to let anyone else get that close to you to hurt you. All of these things must be considered. And then the only way we get by it is to apologize. If the person's no longer available or alive, write a letter, read it out loud, and just burn it. The energy can dissipate. Or if you can reach out to someone, even if they don't want to get back with you, at least you tell them the truth. Tell them, you know, don't be afraid to be humble in life, because humility is a great door opener for forgiveness. Arrogance, ego, it keeps that door welded shut. Because people say, hey, I dealt with you one time. I don't want to deal with all that crap again, you know. And then therefore, it's just self-reinforcing. So can old relationships rekindle? Yes. Can they even be better today than they were then? Absolutely. People change. People's perception changes, some for the better, some for the worse. But that's what you can see about what it's new to start over with someone when everything has really changed. We've aged, we've changed. But what about if we're wiser, kinder, gentler? What if we're more free and spontaneous? Most of the people I've met in my life have lived too small of lives. They've lived by other people's rules of engagement, societal norms, religious norms, cultural norms. And as a result, they haven't lived the full measure of what they're capable of. So don't be afraid to knock on that door again. Except this time, when it was slammed shut, understand that there's another feeling person on the other side. Apologies are always important. Just something to think about. I said I would answer their question on the air. If it helps anyone, fine. I'll be doing a whole lecture on this. By the way, starting in about 3 months, because I'm right in the middle of finishing a lot of projects, articles, books, commentaries, documentaries. And then I'm going to be doing one original lecture per week by Zoom for the next 20 weeks. So that'll be one of them. So anyhow, I mentioned that probiotics have anti-cancer impacts, but I also mentioned that you got to be understanding that it's not the microbe in and of itself. It's not the nutrients. You could take every nutrient in the world. It doesn't mean you're going to benefit to a great degree. It's based upon the energy that you're manifesting. Are you energy? Is your energy happy, upbeat, positive? Then that will have a greater impact. All right. And finally, natural light is a key to improving mood. A new study led by Monash University in Australia has revealed that getting enough natural sunlight each day can impact your mood and sleep quality. They had a cross-sectional longitudinal study of 400,000 participants, and the UK Biobank program found that a lack of daytime light exposure was a risk factor for depression symptoms, poor mood, and insomnia. So just make sure that you get out, get some sunlight. We are 30 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And then if we have people in the audience who would like to give us talk back on when you looked at a problem differently and you look at the reality of an entire movement differently. In this case, get your vaccine. It's safe and effective, 95% effective. And if you get vaccinated, you're not going to get COVID. You're not going to spread COVID. You're going to be healthy. Everything back to normal. Well, Colin Powell died, and he was vaccinated, and he got COVID. And then go to Israel. We had Dr. Rose from Israel here last week, and she talked about 90 to 95% of all the people in Israel have been vaccinated who are senior citizens. And they're the ones, the vast majority of people going to hospital, developing COVID, and dying. So now I've just given you actual figures. 1,768,300 injuries from all of our wars combined. Yet look at the number injured from the vaccines. 2,563,768. And that's not worldwide. That's just one European Union group. So if you took all the injured in the world, you're way over 5 million injured. Way over. So that shows you how can they call it safe and effective when the very people who are getting the breakthrough, and that's really a misnomer, that's a poor utilization of the word. It means a failed vaccine. 888-874-4888 is our number. But when we come back, I'm going to take some calls first, your calls, on this issue, and then we're going to hear some additional input. And by the way, for the women in this audience who've written my office, a lot of women, and they've said they took the vaccine and now they've got bleeding. Okay, that's actually being proven to exist out there. I'll give you the latest information on that, and because new studies are showing this. This is from the Medical News Life Sciences. Quote, study finds menstrual bleeding changes after SARS-2 vaccines. Quote, soon after severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2 vaccinations became public, menstruating women reported unexpected menstrual bleeding and experiences post-vaccination. Unfortunately, menstrual changes were not monitored during vaccine trials, and it wasn't easy to understand whether this observation was coincidental or potentially a side effect. Experts were prompt to deny a biological mechanism and stated no data to support a relationship between vaccination and administration of menstrual changes. Meanwhile, other medical authorities attributed these changes to stress. So everything you could do to deny this happened, but now it's coming all over the world. We're saying this. So what I would tell you is they're going to deny everything. They have to. Oh, and by the way, show you how much a government changes their policies. Canada has now banned unvaccinated people from traveling. You can't board a plane, a train, or a cruise ship if you're not vaccinated. And they're not looking at any of the side effects. And also, when we told you let's have a national program to help people who have comorbidities, making more vulnerable to COVID injury and death, let's help them with their obesity. This is the latest in the University of Gothenburg, which is in Sweden. Obesity in 4 out of 10 adults with COVID-19 in intensive care. Higher risk of prolonged hospitalization and deaths in ICUs for patients with obesity. So what if from the very beginning we had a national program headed by our Surgeon General and the U.S. Public Health Service, where in every city in America we had anti-obesity clinics to help people. Wouldn't that have been the right thing to do? But we didn't do that. We told everyone, don't do anything, don't change anything until the vaccines. Now all the evidence is coming forth to showing they were wrong. And by the way, if you thought their messaging was just a spur-of-the-moment thing, it was not. In fact, what we now know is that they were planning 6 months before the vaccine approval of how to have a pro-vax messaging, including societal guilt. It was being tested by a major university to make sure that they had a message to make you feel guilty for not getting vaccinated, that you were somehow selfish and putting everyone at risk. Well, hey, if the vaccine prevented you from being infected, then why would an unvaccinated person represent a threat? That's just illogical. Then when people, probably one third of all Americans have contracted COVID and the vast majority are asymptomatic and they're protected now probably for life. And yet with a far more rigorous and good outcome than vaccine immunity, they're denying all this. So everything that is right, they're saying is wrong, and everything is wrong, they're saying is right. And it's not just a few, it's the entirety of the establishment. What does that tell you? Back in a moment with your answers. 888-874-4888. Noel from Brooklyn, your turn.
Yes, good afternoon, Gary. It's I don't know who said it. Was it William Shakespeare who said, "All the world is a stage and we are mere players upon it"?
Yes.
Yes. Well, the reason I mentioned that is because if you talk to people, yesterday I was talking to a young lady. She was going out to a breast cancer thing. And I told her about the phototherapy instead of the, oh, and she just rattled off just like it was on television. Well, if I go see a lady, I'm going to tell her. And I said, well, just, you know, try not to, you know, discuss with them about mammograms. Try and talk to them about the photograms. And it just went in one ear and out the other. And I'm one of the many New York City teachers who are not getting paid just because I don't want to put a jab in my arm. You know, what happened to the loyalty that I came to work for all those years, and now it means absolutely nothing because I don't want to take a jab?
Then it tells you what you just stated. That is self-evident. Occam's razor, the most honest, realistic answer is almost always the one right in the middle of your consciousness that begs to be heard, and that is you serve no value, because the real value historically of teachers who were respected and honored in society was because they allowed the student to manifest the critical thinking skills that would allow them to survive and thrive in a society. Today, there are teachers who still have that propensity, who have the desire and the courage to teach the way teaching should be taught, but then that is up against the woke generation, the hypersensitivity generation, those who were raised in bubbles, more often than not by professional class. And I will state on the record today, unequivocally, and I will debate anyone who wishes to proffer a different resolution, that the number one problem in America today is our professional class. Lawyers, doctors, engineers, accountants, scientists, professors, the more educated class, those who have finally honed their critical thinking skills, and by doing so, they have, more often than not, risen to a place of either a policymaker or opinion leader. Therefore, none of this stuff happens from the grassroots up. It happens from a hierarchical position that first sees an advantage in changing a system. And because they're frequently in the system, they will change it to their needs. Now, whether they're right or wrong becomes irrelevant. When you're in power, you're always right. It's only when you lose power that you're wrong. And as a result, they hold all the power. When you have more people who are paid to adjudicate and posit what is right in a school instead of the teacher and the student and the parents, and this is the administration overlap, the constant bloating of top-down people who control everything, so the teacher one day feels, if I say something I shouldn't, I could have a Title IX written against me. Now, like yourself, I've been a teacher. I've been a teacher at the college level, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson, Pratt Institute, College New Rochelle, Fashion Institute, etc., for over 45 years. So it's something clear and dear to me, and I see the pressure teachers are under. If the institutions respected you, they would also respect your sovereignty of self and look at the honest science, which shows that you're not a threat to your students. The students are not a threat to you. Use good science, common sense, and proper hygiene. And then you'll see, as we have historically, an environment where those who choose to have critical thinking will have it. And those who do not, well, then they are excluding themselves and the benefits later in life when they're out of that protective bubble. Remember, we have nothing but bubbles today. When you and I were growing up, we didn't have these bubbles. We were all pretty much living as we normally would. Even those who are wealthier still live within the same system that we did. They went to the same churches and synagogues and mosques. They went to the same high school and grade school, and they may have had a different outcome because they had someone who was caring about it. More often than not, the people I knew, and I was just a regular, you know, working class family, but I knew my friends, Bella Mildred, Steve Haig, these people were wealthy, the man who owned the golf course. Their kids were not spoiled. They were just regular kids. So everything has changed. Will it go back? It will not go back. But that doesn't mean that going forward, it should be they who decide what we go forward as. And denying your right to have sovereignty over your body, denying your right to read the science, the independent science, critically, to deny your right to have a mind that can interpret that which is propaganda versus that which is honest, is to deny you. And that's what your union has done to you. And that's what the people who control that union, the Hillary Clintons, the Bill Clintons, the people who are higher up on the hierarchical chair of life, they're standing above everyone. Now look at them carefully. Look at all the people carefully. Look at them and ask, were they right or wrong, looking back? When Hillary Clinton appointed Madeleine Albright to be the secretary, and she really did, it was her Secretary of State, and then said in that 60 Minutes Leslie Stahl interview, is sacrificing 500,000 innocent children in Iraq, having them starve to death, get water sicknesses by blowing up the plants that purified the water, which was a crime against humanity, and they died. And she said, yes, it's worth it. And in that moment, that was not her speaking. That was everyone in power in Washington, D.C., especially Hillary Clinton. And the bombing of Bosnia, that was the Clintons. And the not intervening in Rwanda, that was the Clintons, who could have intervened and chose not to. They're close friends with Kagame, the war criminal who runs and is president of Uganda. And all the other things they did, I'm just giving them as one example. And yet, for those who need them politically, because they know how corrupt they are, and you always want the most corrupt person because they are the most pliable. If you doubt me, talk with John Perkins. He was a person who was a part of the problem. And he was sent into countries to take over their natural resources, whatever these were, gas, oil, bananas. And he would offer them all that you want, power, control, money, everything, or you'll be killed. And those who said, no, we're not going to give you what you want, in came the jackals, and they were killed. And this has been going on since the end of World War II. But these are the people, the ones who sent in the jackals, that's the deep state, they're in control today. The ones who create the information that goes to the New York Times and CNN tells those, you know, those morons at CNN what to say, they're still in control. So you see, everyone who is corrupt is in control. You're not. So Noel, understand something. Imagine what would happen if the empowered teachers at all levels of society says, we're taking back our curriculum, we're taking back how we're going to teach the curriculum, we're going to work with the parents and the students so that the student at least has some advantages when they get out of here. Otherwise, they're just going to be what Thoreau considered a danger, and that is they selected to be a good citizen rather than a good person. There are two completely different dynamics to the outcome. You know from your own experience what it takes. And yet you will be prevented from that, and you'll be punished for standing up. Does that make sense to you or not?
Gary, I just wanted to add one last thing. Before I retired as a teacher, I actually wanted to become a nurse. But now what was going on, heck no. They cannot. They've already screwed me once. They're not going to screw me twice. Thank you.
Good for you. Let's say hello to Claude from Washington. Hi, Claude. Your turn, Washington, D.C.
Well, I just wanted to comment briefly on the idea that it's safe and effective. In fact, it really is safe and effective. That's the joke, because it's the oligarchs talking to the oligarchs. This is safe and effective for them, for their eugenic policy. You know, it's doing, I think, what they expected it to do. It's going to reduce population. It's going to cause fear and anxiety. It's going to enable them to manipulate the, you know, the world population. So it is safe. It's very effective, and it's safe for them. It's almost like a joke. It's an irony. It's like the line in that film with Dustin Hoffman. I forget the other actor's name. You know, when he's asked, "Is it safe?" You know, and it is safe for them because no one is responsible and no one is going to be, you know, brought into court.
Claude, your analysis is interesting. I would just offer a little different perspective. What if we said, instead of what you just said, what if we said, we do not understand at this moment what their actual motives are, but we can say with certainty it was effective at controlling the dialogue, and their protocols have constricted people into a chronic state of fear and apprehension and made them compliant, where normally they would be far more robust in a dialogue. But they have not allowed any open dialogue, discussion, or anything that contradicts them, and hence the people that we've had on this program, they would never allow to debate their, let's say, Fauci or a surgeon general or the head of the U.S. Public Health Service or anyone else associated, because you would immediately see the naked emperor. I cannot say with any data that their motives were to control the world population by eugenics. I believe that that is one of the mistakes that some people are making, what I call the Alex Jones faction, and that's unfortunate because if the moment you cross a line of what you can prove, I can prove that the PCR test is a fraud. It does not do the diagnosis. I can prove that their mortality statistics were grossly inflated. I can prove that the vaccine is neither safe nor effective. I can prove that it's only 1% absolute effective versus the 95% relative effectiveness, which is an artificial mathematical model. I can prove that they excluded people from their initial studies, like pregnant women and women with cancer and men with dementia, etc., then immediately demand they take it. Well, just use common sense. If you exclude someone because you know that you're likely to get a bad outcome, why then would you expect any less of an outcome when those people you excluded are now demanded to be taking that product? But that dialogue is never discussed. It's just all pro. When they can find nothing about Fauci, nothing about him funding over 28 studies on gain-of-function research and other studies in the Wuhan lab prior to this, and yet denying any such money or any such studies existed, then you know you're dealing with a certain pathology. But Fauci is confident enough to know that he can get away with it because he got away with the AIDS fiasco, and that was just a harbinger of what might happen. So does that make sense to you, Claude?
Yeah, I mean, and the reason why I brought up the eugenics is because, and I should also note that a lot of the information I have, also from you and from Global Research and Mikhail Chozodovsky, but I also know from other sources that the Rockefeller Foundation and the Gates Foundation have a background in eugenics, and that's,
you're right.
And that's old history.
You are right, but they will say it's not eugenics. They will say it's understanding how to reduce population so that the existing population can be better served, their lives saved, their lives made better. They can have an argument. Ted Turner was one of those individuals as well. I would oppose that because I do not believe that any human being has a right to tell another human being, you no longer have the same social value, economic value as someone else, so you're going to be the ones that we don't want to see live. So we're going to exclude medicine or anything, any of the ways we're going to sterilize you. That was common until 1976. And it's never the rich and powerful. It's never those who are the people in control of the dialogue who are ever considered of no value to society. So today, all the people in Davos, and those are a bunch of dancing clowns, I've counseled some of these people. They're functional idiots. In fact, all the celebrities I've ever counseled, with two exceptions, are idiots. And I won't tell you who they are because I won't break that confidence. I help people no matter what their background. But my God, these people are misinformed. We think because if a person, you know, has a gold record or platinum record and has got a best-selling book or his top movie, that somehow that imbues them with a certainty of life outcomes that their average person doesn't have. You would be absolutely wrong. I've never counseled a single person in my life who I felt was completely comfortable in their own skin and was vulnerable enough to live an authentic life without the trappings of always trying to do more. And being a celebrity in no small measure needing the power that comes from that is just in direct relationship to how insecure a person is about themselves. People are afraid of waking up one day and the world sees you as a fraud. Even if you're not a fraud, people have that fear. And I counsel one guy. Let me talk about that tomorrow because we have a lot of people still on the line and want to talk. But I counseled a very famous person who had three big hits in the 1970s, came to see me. He was still young. And the reason he was coming is because he had had some problems with his throat. And so that was the whole issue. But then while there, and I didn't ask him any of this. He just opened up and talked about, you know, his fear of one day being in a golden oldie revival where the phone never rings unless you're exploited by some low amount of money to go out and with 20 other people and be on the stage, you know, to sing one of your three hits or whatever it is. And how can he prevent that from happening? And then I had a conversation with him. What do you value in life? Do you value being in front of people? Do you need that? Is that an opiate for you? Is that addictive? Needing the idol worship. If you just enjoy your life and being able to be creative, then don't focus upon the success part of it. Focus upon the growing part of it. So anyhow, more on that, about the dangers, the poison of success, poisoning of success that happens in all fields. Thank you very much, Claude. Ed from Los Angeles. Ed, for WBAI, we're going to take you up to where we have to say goodbye, but we're going to continue up to the top of the hour. Go ahead, Ed, your turn.
Thanks for taking my call, Gary, and thanks for everything you do. I took ivermectin last summer for scabies. I had no side effects, and they call it my doctor never called it a horse dewormer, only about 30 seconds. I wanted everybody to call me Mr. Ed, and I called everybody Wilbur. But that lasted only 30 seconds, and then it went away. A couple of things. When I wake up every morning, I'm in gratitude. I thank God for everything that I have right now. It doesn't mean I have everything I need. And the other thing I do is I encourage everybody to laugh. I go on YouTube about 2 hours before I go to bed, and I watch the old Johnny Carson, Don Rickles, Rodney Dangerfield, and boy, am I laughing. I am just cracking up. I'm a fellow comedian just like Joe Rogan. He completely destroyed Dr. Sanjay Gupta. And the other thing I would encourage everybody to do, visualization. My sister used it. She was in a shelter for 3 years. 2 weeks ago, I asked her to visualize. She's now in an apartment 2 weeks later. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed. And you're right. I also, late at night, mine's generally around 1 a.m. when I finish my day in counseling people, which I do by phone, I'll watch Don Rickles. I think he was one of the most caustic, insulting, funny people ever. And if you look at all those at the dais, everybody on there, he was making fun of everybody, and they were laughing themselves I've never seen that kind of laughter. Yet today, he would be banned in a heartbeat. In fact, they were talking about Airplane. Airplane was a hilarious film. You cannot watch Airplane without laughing your ass off. And yet today, we wouldn't be able to make Airplane. And comedians are not funny anymore. They want to be ironic. Look at Colbert and look at Jimmy Kimmel. These people are not funny. And there's nothing profound that comes out of their mouths. They're merely their voices for the establishment to show the irony of their circumstance. And where's the funniness? And you said Rodney Dangerfield. I counsel Rodney Dangerfield. I'll mention this because he went public with it, and he was a hoot. He was one crazy dude when it came to how he spoke. More on that on another program. And Dick Gregory is a close friend of mine. In fact, I had a place upstairs here where Dick would come and spend a week at a time. And he'd run by routines before he'd go back on the road. Do you think he'd be allowed to say many of the things he was saying then? He was very political, but he tied the political in with his humor. So the message went down easier. No, you wouldn't see Lenny Bruce today. You wouldn't see Jonathan Winters. In fact, I doubt that much of what Robin Williams represented you'd be able to see today because of his improvisation. Where do we have room for improvisation today? So good for you, Ed. Thank you for calling in. And let's just see. I've gone through the people who are up there. If anybody else didn't get on, and let me just ask New York, is there anyone else, Rodney, standing by? I don't want to miss anyone. Jeremiah from Harlem, your turn.
Hi, how are you today, Gary?
Good. Good to always hear from you.
Likewise. Great program and keep up the great work. I'm looking at a ticker right now with all the COVID numbers from around the world in terms of the number of cases, number of deaths. And I just want to read a couple of them to you. Tajikistan, 125 deaths. Burundi, 38 deaths. Timor-Leste, 119 deaths. Somalia, 1,180 deaths. Lesotho, 650 deaths. Bahamas, 590 deaths. Belize, 461 deaths. Tanzania, 724 deaths. Tanzania was a place where I actually had the honor of visiting when I was 15 years old, and I didn't realize until I looked it up recently, the population in Tanzania is 58.3 million people. So my point is that there's not a global pandemic by a lot of measures in terms of the raw numbers. Thankfully, when you look at many countries around the world, in Africa, in Asia, there's countries with double-digit, triple-digit, maybe a few thousand deaths, which of course are all very tragic, but there's not one country in the world whose youthful population has been ravaged, and the global population in total hasn't decreased. The population growth in the world has increased, thankfully. So, you know, I just would love to hear, you know, some focus on some of those raw numbers, because even the number of cases, I asked people, how many people in the world have caught COVID? As of right now, it says 241,655,486 cases, 212,000 already listed as recovered, 212,420. 879 listed as recovered, and there's 24 million active cases in the world. But they act as though everyone is definitely going to get COVID. Something I would love to hear explored more was Dr. Carl Friston early on said that it's possible up to 80% of the world's population is not even susceptible to COVID. So, you know, I would love to hear more criticism in general and challenging in general of the firsthand, you know, the first of all notion, the first step of all this, which is the idea that 4.9 million deaths in 20 months should lead to a medical intervention for the entire planet. Like, that just strikes me as such a terrible idea. And I can't believe so many people would be on board with that. It's just startling, staggering, depressing.
Hey. As of tomorrow, I didn't get to it today, but tomorrow you'll hear one of the world's leading authorities on the actual death certificates, death estimates. And remember, at least 50% of all the deaths alleged to be from COVID were not. They were for other conditions, and that's based upon official statistics. Heart disease, emphysema, everyone dying in hospice care. And mind you, you're only in hospice care because you're there for a day, a week, a month, or two to die. And you have cancer, you have an end-stage disease. Now, then if they give those people a PCR test and it tests positive, then they're going to say they died of COVID. No, they died of an underlying condition. This has also been shown to be the case in Italy, in Spain, in Ireland, when they were initially finding all these deaths. These were almost all people 84 years of age, actually longer than 81, their average lifespan. And they had emphysema, they were lifeline smokers. But then when they started giving the false test, the Dresden test, which is a false positive test, they showed they had COVID, but it didn't show that they died of COVID. And when they started doing more careful autopsies, they found they died of their underlying conditions. So even conservatively, I would cut the death toll by half. But then a figure you stated, only 200,000 have reversed. No, it's got to be at least 200 million of reverse, because if you have those who have active cases and those who reverse, then what does that do with all the other hundreds of millions of people who have had COVID? It means that they have survived, and the vast majority have survived throughout the world because A, their life, their health was stronger, and B, that they have natural immunity, and they'll probably have that, some of them, for the rest of their life. So if you told people that, then someone's going to say, well, wouldn't it make sense then if people got the virus but got as healthy as they could and had a protocol that if they got sick, you were treating them from day one? And yes, doctors were doing exactly that, including in Africa, in South America, and into Mexico, and in India, the largest state in India with over 200 million people. They have their flatline on COVID, flatlined. But before they implemented a package they were giving people, and also this is true in Peru, you can see in the package ivermectin. Well, then suddenly there's no more deaths or COVID cases. Then what else can you attribute it to? Everything else was identical. The diet, everything else. And those are people that didn't get the vaccines. The majority didn't. So you see, they wanted the vaccine and an inexpensive and ineffective deadly drug to be the only treatment. Now, when someone tells you this is the only treatment and you tell a doctor, you've got to watch a patient get worse and worse and worse and worse and for weeks until they have to go to the hospital. And then when they're near death, then they can enter the ICU. A doctor's going to say, that's insane. We have things that can treat them now. Oh, no, no, you can't use any of it. Do that and we can take away your license. This shows you the corruption within the system. Thank you very much, Jeremiah from Harlem, for bringing that to our attention. And I will be having experts on this week to go into the very things that you're asking about, the truth of mortality around the world and what we can do to bring all this back into some more realistic and clear focus. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned now for Utrecht Slate.